We've been doing commercials for the Tribune and their Lit Fest. It's an annual affair in Chicago, of course, that brings authors and writers of all stripes, newspaper writers, magazine writers, and authors to Chicago. And they do a whole series of seminars and book reviews and book sales and talk sessions. And a lot of the authors come into town. Joyce Carol Oates is in town. Is it tonight, Ella, for... No, she was going to be on with us today, but we couldn't work it out with the baseball game. But Joyce Carol Oates and others are coming to town. And then some of them are from Chicago. Robert Curson yesterday, was nice to have him in studio. And Russ Bradbird is in our studio right now. All the Dreams We've Dreamed is his story of hoops and handguns on Chicago's West Side. Welcome to the show.
Good, John. It's good to be here. Thank you.
So where do you live these days?
Well, I teach at New Mexico State University, but I grew up on the edge of Albany Park, went to Von Steuben High School and North Park College. But I live in the summers, I live in Ravenswood. Right off the Brown Line. So I get out of the Chicago winters and the New Mexico summers. So it's a good, I'm not a millionaire, but it's a millionaire's lifestyle.
Ravenswood's a nice neighborhood.
That's right. A little different than the West Side.
Yeah. Well, that's the nice thing about your book. You and I were talking off the air and I said, I've spent a long time in the Chicago and area and in Illinois, but I haven't been in the gyms of Marshall and King. Yeah. And it's nice that you take me there.
Yes.
I really feel like, I kind of wondered what life is like for these kids and what the basketball culture is in some of these city schools. And I really got a sense of that reading your book.
Yeah, I think any writer worth his salt is trying to take the reader into a world that they don't know. And of course, the danger is there's people who know this world a little better than I do that might not think I got it right. But I think I got Sean Harrington's story right and tried to get it right from my perspective.
Who is Sean Harrington?
Sean Harrington is at the center of the book, All the Dreams We've Dreamed. He was the assistant coach at Marshall, and almost exactly 4 years ago, he was driving his daughter to school at 7:30 in the morning, and he was in a rental car. And suddenly, two men ran up to the car and started shooting. And it was a mistaken identity, wrong car, wrong guy. But he dove on top of his daughter, John, and it's really an astonishing act of heroism. He dives on top of his daughter and takes two bullets in the back, one in the spine, but another bullet went through his daughter's headrest. So he undoubtedly saved her life. And the police were saying that right from the minute they showed up at the crime scene.
But
since then, he was paralyzed from the waist down. And he says, you know, that this is he did what any parent would have done. But I don't believe it. I think that we don't know how we're going to react till the bullets start flying. And he reacted like a hero. And so that's sort of the central event of the book. And that's how the book starts out.
You describe how brazen the act was to these, what was it, two cars that were sort of going on either side. You're right, he was in a rental, and so the bad guys evidently thought that this was the car they were looking for, but it wasn't.
That's right.
And they... What did they get out of the cars and point and then just start firing?
Well, they were on the street already looking for someone who they were looking for someone they had a disagreement with. But the terrifying thing to me at first was that it's still terrifying that it's 7:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, we always tell people you shouldn't be out at 2 in the morning, or why are you at a party at 3 in the morning? But in this case, it's the morning commute.
So what happens to him as a result of these gunshots?
Well, because he was a special ed teacher's aide. He's not a regular teacher, and so he's under a different union contract. And so after 90 days, his paycheck stopped. And soon after that, his insurance stopped. And so I started.
He survived the shooting.
That's right.
Obviously.
He survived the shooting, as did the daughter, who's now a college sophomore. But I started trying to advocate for Sean. I had this idea that if I can get just as much publicity as I can get for Sean Harrington, that will help with the fundraising efforts now that his insurance has been cut off. But the more I tried to get publicity for him, the more I got obsessed with it. And finally, the writer Alex Kotlowitz, who wrote There Are No Children Here, really a great Chicago book, said, you know, I was trying to get him to write an article about it. And Alex said, you should write, this is a book you should be writing. And I thought, I think I had been in denial. I knew that I should be writing about it. But finally, after a year of advocating, I decided to start writing.
Where is he today?
Well, he was out of work for about 3 years until finally the Chicago Public Schools was able to repurpose his job. You know, there's no wheelchair. It's not wheelchair accessible at Marshall. And he wanted to stay at Marshall. Marshall is home for him. That's where Sean Harrington went to high school. He appeared briefly in the movie Hoop Dreams. But there was no, it's not wheelchair accessible. Well, they've created a new position for Sean at Marshall. He's a restorative justice counselor. So he's working with kids who have been damaged by violence or have a disagreement or that kind of thing. And so he's the intermediary, and it's actually the perfect job for him. Now, one of the things that I think has frustrated some of us is that he's not all of a sudden better because he got his job repurposed. So he's had ups and downs since then. You know, he's had been in and out of therapy, trying to get 100% healthy, but he's planning on going back full time in the fall.
How much mobility does he have?
Well, he's good from the waist up. So he's a T4 spinal cord injury. So he's got full use of his arms, and you know, everything above the waist is fine. And occasionally he'll get a little sparks of a little nerve connection, and his foot will kick or his leg will twitch or that kind of thing. And so I think he's still holding out hope that you know, spinal cord injuries are funny. But my understanding is if he doesn't get better quickly and right away, that, you know, that hope starts fading, the percentages start fading. Yet with modern technology, you never know. So he's remarkably upbeat, but it's, you know, he's been through the, and since his shooting, John, 7 Marshall players have been killed. Now 6 of them are in the book. Another one was killed 2 weeks ago.
Say that again?
Well, 7 players that Sean had coached at Marshall High School, or 6 players that he'd coached at Marshall, have been killed.
How long was he a coach at Marshall High School?
Well, from 2008 until 2014, until the shooting.
Over the course of 6 years, they were averaging 1 player killed a year?
Yes, but all the players that were killed after Sean was shot. And so that's one of the things that happens in the book, is that, you know, there's a writer named Grace Paley said, you don't really have a story till you have 2 stories. And in Sean's case, after a year after he was shot, the star player of the team, a kid named Tim Triplett, was murdered. And that's when the story, I think, really took off for me in writing it. Is here was, you know, Tim Triplett and Sean Harrington were very similar. They both had a parent who had been murdered, victim of gun violence. They were both charismatic point guards. But Sean was able to get out of town, attend a junior college, and Tim Triplett, because Sean was incapacitated, was never able to find an out-of-town junior college scholarship, wound up staying in Chicago, and was dead a year later.
You need to just dwell on this point a little longer. So in what span of time?
Well,
to think about this. If one basketball player from a lot of other schools had ever been shot,
that's right,
that would have been a story we talk about forever.
Well, I think that's very true. Is that, and even what Sean did in saving the daughter's life, had that happened overseas, you know, in a war zone or something, he'd be on the front of the New York Times. But I think because it's the west side of Chicago, we've all become immune to the violence. But Sean was shot in 2014. And within 3 years, 6 other players had been murdered. And they were all from a 2 or 3 year time span. Triplett was really the only one you could call a star.
Were these murders connected?
No, not at all.
How endemic the violence is,
yes,
there?
Yes, and it's hard to say, you know, were the kids doing things at night that maybe they shouldn't have been doing? It's hard to say. It's murky. You know, some of the kids had minor arrest records. But you know, one of the things I think that's happened to, you know, that happened.
One of them was a drug dealer.
Well, it's hard to know for sure, but some of them, a couple of them were clearly mistaken identity shootings. One of them, you know, a couple of them were kids who'd never been in trouble for anything, but other ones had been involved in the trade, it seemed. And so one of the things that I struggle with in the book is, are we going to call a kid a gang member who's been arrested for marijuana? You know, and it's one of the, I think, difficult kids for kids growing up on the West Side, is they often have arrest records for possession of marijuana.
You say that the culture on the south and west sides of Chicago is that if you're a basketball player, the code is, if that kid keeps his nose clean and out of your business, the gangs don't pick on them. They're okay.
I think that was the code at one time, although there's certainly examples. You know, Ben Wilson, that everyone in Chicago would remember, was, you know, killed in broad daylight. He was the number one high school player in the country. But in general, the ball players were sort of given a pass. So some people call it, I know Bryant Gumbel on his HBO special on Sean Harrington called it the Hooper's Pass. I think there's a lot of truth to that. But even Arthur Agee in the movie Hoop Dreams, you know, he gets, at the end of the film, he was robbed at gunpoint. And so I think in general that was true, and there's less structure and less hierarchy now for a number of reasons.
It works both ways, too. You also describe a scene where Sean was with his friends, and the cops pulled up and dragged him out of his Ford Bronco or whatever it was. He had a baggie. Can you tell that story?
Well, Sean has had, like a lot of kids on the West Side, he'd had a couple run-ins with the police where they wound up with their hands on the side of the car, and some of the other guys were complaining, saying, you know, raising hell. And Sean said, you know, he's pretty unflappable. I said, look, fellas, let's just let them do their job and we'll get out of here.
Even though in this instance there was no crime that they had committed.
No, and it was a mixed race crew with some Puerto Rican kids and African American kids. But Sean has been, you know, he's remarkably resilient. And he'd been picked up on another occasion, wound up in the back of a squad car, and then just was let go. But his feeling, he doesn't harbor bitterness in a way that, you know, that's one of the interesting things about the book, John, is he has a different view of a lot of the things that happened than I do. He has this idea that he didn't do anything heroic, which I don't think is true, but he has this, you know, he was remarkably receptive to, you know, letting the cops do their job and that kind of thing.
Well, was that the episode where, so he's got his hands cuffed behind his back, he's going to maybe the police station for reasons that aren't clear to him, or it's clear to him that this is wrong. There's no law against having a baggie that's empty. And then he starts to engage them and talk about basketball. What do you make of the Bulls this season?
Yes, they were complaining about the Bulls' offense since
he starts Michael to speak up.
Yes, and they said, well, what do you know about it? And you know, I think that's one of the amazing things about Sean Harrington is he's able to, what some people call switching codes, that he can talk to the high school principal, he can talk to the gangbanger kid, he can talk to the president of the Chicago Tribune Corporation. He can talk to a lot of different people and switch codes, and I think that's what's really remarkable about him.
Well, somebody in the book was talking about, was it his principal, how valuable a guy like him, and he particularly, specifically was to that school, that to the administrators, he could dress immaculately, he could speak the professional grade speech, but then when he was in the hallways or on the court with the kids, he could relate to them on their level. And for a male to have that kind of a role in these kids' lives at school was so important.
I think that's very true, is that there's less male teachers than you might think. And especially to have, the big celebrity, you know, at a lot of the West Side schools particularly are the basketball stars and the basketball coaches. And so to have a coach that could talk to every kid, knew every kid by name, and had this sort of magical touch with kids was really invaluable to Marshall.
And Marshall's always been kind of a hard-scrabble team, right? Never the biggest school, never the biggest kids, but always the swarming defense, the high energy club. Is that a fair description?
That's right. And I think that's part of the reason, you know, at the beginning of all the dreams we've dreamed, I talk about that, is that Sean reacted like a war hero when the bullets started flying, partly because he'd grown up around gun violence. But also, I think, you know, you play for Luther Bedford, the legendary Marshall coach, and you're sort of taught, like, No matter how under fire we are, we're not going to panic. We're going to react calmly and coolly and do what we're supposed to do, and that's how he reacted.
Luther Bedford, the one that would whack the kids when they got bad grades?
Well, yes, and the movie, The Hoop Dreams, doesn't cover that, but, you know, it was just a different mentality in a different era.
Well, it wasn't 1932 this happened, though.
No, but if, you know, everyone I interviewed for the book all said, yes, I was paddled by Luther Bedford if I got an F or a D or if I missed class, and I'm glad he did it. You know, it's not what you would expect from the, you know, from the civil rights activists or that kind of thing.
Or the kids themselves.
That's right.
So it was, what, six whacks for an F and three for a D?
Something like that. And, you know, so Sean was a pretty good student, so he had a minimum of Fs.
But you tell the story about the one kid who'd flunked off the team his senior year. So
yes.
he's not coming back next year, and he's not going to play basketball again.
Right.
So he turns in his report card. He's got all Fs.
Yes.
He goes into the coach, and he knows he's now going to get hit six times, plus some extra because the coach was angry. He's going to get 30, 40, 50 whacks.
Why not walk out?
You ain't coming back next year, dude. You're a senior.
Well, I think it has to do with, there's a certain mentality, I think, that the Marshall kids have, and Sean Harrington certainly has it, that the book talks about, is that these guys, they're the Marshall Commandos, which is one of the great nicknames ever. But whenever they send an email or text, they always put at the end of it, C4L, Commandos for life. And I think, my hunch on this is that kid who had to get the 18 whacks and could have walked out, never gotten whacked, but he would never play it again anyway. I think he felt like, I'm still a commando, even though I'm kicked off the team. I've got to react like a commando.
Man alive. Russ Bradbird's book is All the Dreams We've Dreamed. I got to go, Russ, but this is more than just a story about basketball or one basketball player / coach / school administrator now. It's a story about part of Chicago that some of us know about, but only tangentially. You know, we only read a little bit about it, and you take us into that.
Thank you. That's right. And we'll be at Printer's Row on Saturday at 1 p.m. at Jones High School Library, but also at City Lit Books Wednesday night, City Lit Books at 6:30 if you can't get to Printer's Row this weekend.
If you can't, just find it. All the dreams we've dreamed. Well done, Russ. Nice to meet you.
Thank you, John.